This is part three of the chapter part three has to do with that personal counseling we will call communicating. This new day again is social workers and youth and family and children service centers, and letting out both counselors, deputies, and church centers, and that's the diagnostic. I want to discuss today is the discussion of just how one goes about beginning the community. Mona, would you have some kind of helpful advice to give us about an opening statement? Something that would help people to begin talking about their family.
Well, there's an opening statement that I do use very often. And that statement is simply after these second hands and that moment, I'm interested in hearing about your concerns, about your situation. Can you tell me what God is here? And that's usually enough to help someone either begin to talk or to cry if something happens. At least to begin to help him open up and say it. That's the problem.
Mm-hmm. The pastor certainly knows what the problem is and what's coming. And how do you get started?
I think that it is true that very often I think a pretty good idea of why they're coming in. Or if I don't, after we talked a bit, I simply said that you wanted to talk to me about something. And you had something on your mind, and most of the time, people will move into this. The only time that I can think this doesn't work real well is if somebody comes in that I don't know, and it doesn't know me, and this is a first time situation. Then sometimes it's a little difficult to really get out what that they're after, but usually that's the way I go out and say you wanted to talk to me about something, or if you had something that was concerning you, then I'm ready to work.
Thank you for using that from opening statements and transitional statements to help people get started. Let's assume that people are excited, loud talking. The next thing you need to consider is how do you is it a function of your creative listening? What will be the name of that term for you, man? Creative listening. Can you tell us some things about that?
Yeah, the name you get more than what I use is the idea that the person sitting across from me and myself are part of a team. And you don't get to be a working team within 10 seconds. It's something that both of us are working on. My job is to communicate to the other person that I want to listen to me, that I want to understand what the situation is, and to do that in a rather comfortable atmosphere for the person, and that involves building what comfort means to that person for that hour. It involves a kind of warmth, a kind of trust on my part that the person will talk within the time, an acceptance of what they say without making judgment, and some kind of a statement on my part that I'm willing to go with you, I'm willing to be with you, your fellow members. That's my mindset, my attitude, my working approach, if you will.
So, I like Paul Allen used the phrase like unconditional power of God, unconditional acceptance of the other person and experience. The rest of the people you can listen to what you say, is that what you mean?
Yes, that's what I mean. As you say that, I'm thinking that's very hard to do with many people. Someone who walks into your office and who is very, very passionate and begins to push out through the hurt area on you, bringing my attention on your soul. It's very hard to communicate our value as a human being. But you've got to do it. You've got to either embrace pain or what you say or transfer an invitation to sit down and talk around it. You've got to communicate that you think this person is valuable, important.
You've got to get listening somehow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Listening and asking it, maybe a little empathy, which is if you can learn to allow and listen to it's always something you want.
Well, the thing is that God is not going to feel tired or grumpy or I've been late there or I've lost that kind of or something. I'm not ready to do that for you. Maybe there's a minute or two of starting my door and trying to live in my house and sitting quietly and getting my own feet back in the room before I can do it with somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some preparation in my house.
One of the difficulties that I see in this kind of behavior, for example, is that so much of our training and so much of our experience as human beings has to do with the values. Making judgments and making valuable statements about people, not as a part of content, but in that case, that evaluating as an important thing and having to go on. And now it seems like we're saying something else when it comes to content traffic, what we use in the non-judgmental, non-value of water, that means we have to be open and accepting and taking whatever people are doing to us. You see a conflict there? Just in any conflict, you feel that conflict could be. What do you do with
your values? Well, I would give a tremendous conflict. I think we are in a position of evaluating behavior. We have to make decisions as to how anxious, how upset the person is, or how rocky a marriage is. We have to evaluate what's going on. But that's a different thing from evaluating the person as a human being. Evaluating the behavior is a different thing from somehow communicating to the person that he isn't worth a lot or that he's stupid because he's doing this behavior. And I think it takes a long time to make a difference between evaluating the behavior and still being able to accept the person as just as worth a lot as you are.
Mm-hmm.
Just as much right to walk into your office as you have to do that, part of a human being.
So you say the difference between evaluating, which is one part of what goes on inside the counselor, and valuing the counselor, you might be able to do both at the same time.
Exactly.
And you have separate functions.
It would be important for the counselor to know where he is and how he's feeling. I have two jobs. If a person comes in and gives the counselor the pastor the feeling, you couldn't possibly know the kind of things I'd like to talk to you about. You couldn't possibly accept it or ask me so naive the kind of, you live in a religious life. And I've done things that said, and I'm involved in things that you just couldn't possibly understand. I couldn't describe it to you. And very practically makes us a culture uneasy, a culture uneasy, if they pick this up. The other thing is a feeling on the part of the person who's saying, I'm not really sure that you can help me. And it's got out that way. I don't think you can help me. And that cannot be making a call with a death right at that point and say, I'd like to help you, something like that. But I think how the counselor reacts And how you just know who you are is tremendously important in what you say to the other person. Because if they see that they have something here, if they, if you give them the impression that's right, I couldn't possibly understand. I think that when the people will start talking about the surface symptoms, that is a really good idea.
You say, you're saying a counselor needs to be pretty much sensitive.
I guess so.
That how we react to what people tell us might be very important. If somebody makes some kind of disclosure to us and we jump back and cover our mouth to get our hands or something, that would really tell us then, or if you would sit there and say, that might help them too.
I think that's a good, the very good thing, but knowing how really when you do that is an important part of cancer, insofar as we can know it. I often have to deal with people who come in, sit down, and in the latter half of the room, we'll ask the question like this. What qualifies a socialist to be a counselor as opposed to a psychiatrist? How long have you been with it? And those kinds of questions, you know, I really want to say, who are you? Where are you looking to me? Are you going to be judgmental? Can you tell me? And I will often respond with a statement like, yeah, giving them some factual qualifications, although I know them like that. And then I will perhaps confront what I think is the feeling. It's kind of if you're not quite sure that I'm ready to listen to you. It's kind of if you're not quite sure that I can be helpful. And that will generally help them to realize what that is really
true.
And we can talk about it. And we will generally then stand up and I may not be able to help you, but I'm willing to try. And if I can, there are other people who may be in better position to do so. And they will have to find
them. Some people are questioning the whole idea. What did he talking about his view? You know, he talked about his home and he didn't help. And now he was supposed to talk about his view. What did he talking about his view? And if you never thought of that before, for example, just said, first time you were going to be in trouble. And maybe the second time, the third time. It's a very real question, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
It's a question the council should have thought about. And if you didn't even go along the way about it, people were talking to you about it. And of course, part of what is threatening about that question is that we know it's true. Or could be true. Talking about it really means not good sometimes. And you might like to be doing it somebody by doing that. I don't know if that is again. Let's try it together for a while and see if it doesn't do it. We just decide it doesn't think we probably should quit. And I'd like to suggest that for Pastor, this is a fairly difficult thing. Even if we know that this is not that it's going to be helpful, even though he may very well know it's not going to be helpful, but he's programmed to know that he's supposed to help everybody that comes in. And I would hope that that could be a tremendously special title. I'm starting to think that I can afford it. So then we have everybody that to, whether they're helpable or not, huh? I'd like to ask a question here. If it's in this particular area, it seems to me that as I meet with people, I would much rather try to develop a person-to-person type of thing, rather than person-to-talk. I think it's a matter of your story or thing. That's not the role of person. I'd rather have that person see me as somebody in whom blood is circulating, rather than simply someone who has a black hair dye. Like a human.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
I think that that's my feeling about being a counselor, too. I don't want someone who's seeing you as just a role of dependent, for instance, or as the authority who will tell them what to do and when things will never to be okay. I want them to feel that the fear is a person with some fear to maybe be able to help them and move on. And much of the way that I try to get this across is more vivid.
I think that's the best thing, is that the counseling, what makes counseling work is that it is a human relationship. I do very much of that, but I'd like to add that it is a controlled relationship, and it might at times be a very fun-looking relationship if you compare it with, for example, a social relationship. Counseling relationships is lopsided. It most of the input goes in one direction, the personal input, whereas in a social relationship, the input goes in both directions. The focus of the counseling relationship is very much on the counselee. We're not going to be too concerned about how the pastor feels, who's supposed to manage that.
I think that's important because it's so easy to want to be a human being, and then you get pulled in the direction of being just a human, sitting there listening. And the certain things you can get that over the back of your head, or that's a way to do it. But you're there to keep the focus on the person, to say, you know, here to talk about me, or, you know, here to talk about me, accepting the fact that you value me. Yeah, it's a very controlled situation, and my word would be it's a very stressful situation, it's all about the stressful. Somebody to see that. Maybe you need to find an answer.
How about using logic for killing this guy? Do you see this as a common signal?
It's another very common signal of anxiety, I think. Someone who laughs too much and too artificially becomes more looking for fear or wonder of being what they're doing.
Okay. You know, and can be very important pace of speech. The same thing happens sometimes when people can't remember things back and nothing like that. It gets started down for the cat and all of a sudden now of words. They're taking the names that are quite easy out of the front here. And many of these beginning to touch on something that I think is very important when it comes to listening is how the counselor lets the person who comes to them know that it's coming from them. You said you watch for the sound that I'm using this and then say a simple sentence like, you see me out ready to cry.
So this is a curious thing. You have, you know, content. You have what the patient wants to claim, wants to talk to you about. And you have the feeling there. And amazingly enough, if you pick up on what they're feeling, you enable them to talk about whatever they need to talk about. And you also communicate that you care about them and that you're with them. So for instance, if a person comes into my office is a very crafty eye, and I really feel that this person has been wanting to talk, and I know for certain. I look as if they're wanting to talk. And the person will, and then they're being able to tell me why. What's going on for that? What has caused the problem? If I notice that their hands are shaking a little bit, and they're telling me, and they're told what kind of work. It seems as if this is making you very tense, very nervous. And this is what's coming, allows them to either talk about the problem, about their feelings, about coming into my office. I'm communicating to them that I'm willfully missing.
But the interest in that person.
Yes,
and that's totally important to what's going
on. And I can make a statement somewhere in the room that this must be very hard for you. That is another indication that I realize it's a frightening thing to tell me, it's a frightening thing to have a problem. There are other ways too of indicating concern. One is to maintain lack of eye contact. Not to look down at your own desk, but to look at them. And to put into words what they think they're ready to say if they can't. That's a tricky thing, you can't do it all the time. Sometimes get the word from your listener. But if somebody is having trouble, you can say, I wonder if this is what happens. Can you tell me? And if it's not that, they can tell you if you've made it closer to this word.
The process has had to let the person know that expressing feelings is unacceptable. I would say that when a person comes in to see a pastor, they will very often feel that they're certain feelings are not expressed. Maybe because they're wrongly, that's what they've been taught, or because it's just a pastor. And I would think that somehow that has to, they have to let them know if not only is it acceptable, but I really do want to express the feelings that you have, whether it's with anger, whether it's with feeling, being proud, being loved, whatever it is. But that is an acceptable thing to do.
And there's a statement within the context of the problem, like, you know, everybody decides to be on vacation, or if you've got to hang up in the
room.
That's the thing.
Some of the ways in which you signal that you're paying attention to the person before you. Would you to demonstrate your ability to to understand what you said by saying it again. You say that you said a ton around this principle. Maybe the remembering what he said 3 weeks ago. And putting that into the conversation of this good somehow. Can we stand there from the same tension that we're on?
Another way of communicating respect and attention to the person is to take your own appearance wherever it comes. You take it to not know too much, to not find when the person says something that we disagree with or that we think is unnecessary. To maintain a rather calm, unemotional, and by that I mean sentimental or sticky or overwhelming kind of emotion. To maintain a professional attitude is a way of communicating acceptance.
One last quick question about silence during the interview. I think that counsel can put a certain kind of pressure on the person beforehand by asking questions, even by the way that you might summarize what he's heard. You can also put a certain kind of pressure on people by being silent. It's a pressure to, for the counsel to use that, I guess, to continue to know that this is a an atmosphere, a place, and a person with whom we want to do that.
I found that probably one of the most difficult things to learn. I read about this 100 people, and then I panicked at the time of silence. I guess it's the old idea that, you know, it's after they said nothing is happening, the pastor had to fill up the voice. But I'm beginning to work with it now, I can live with it. But I used to find it totally psychic, totally psychic. It's just quiet, and I had to make something happen, even though I knew that's not what had to happen.
I was
doing it.
I was
controlled
to
see
that thing happening.
But it's a signal loud and clear, I'm sure. I think we're trying to believe that, and he's convinced to do that. He's always been able to be able to sit there and sign. I don't have to be silent when he's tired on his left. I think it's time to leave the last one to do something. One last thought about how the counselor might feel about his communication skills as he does counseling, particularly the counselor. He's been trained as a communicator. But for a specific situation, you can send it to the communicator to allow it to the people. Communication in one of one is somewhat of a different thing. It requires different skills.
I think it's helpful to think of ourselves as this is a special routine. You're in an you're still active, and you're helping other people to talk. They don't come to listen to us if they come to counseling. They come in hope that we can help them communicate. And a lot of ways you can do that, which we've been talking about. But one of the ways not to do it is to spend a little while talking yourself.
There is some patience for the pastor counsel because the sensibility that could be put down in a different way for a different kind of conference. Okay. This concludes part 3 of our conference series on communication. Conference series, part 4 will deal with the emotional aspects of conference. This again is Mrs. Leonard Kirkberg of Lutheran Family and Southern Service St. Louis, a social worker, and Reverend Alfred Gold of Bethel Lutheran Church Center, and Latin Bell Master. The basic underlying notion that we have today is that what people feel makes a difference. part of what causes people to be in conflict is emotional. One way to pick that up, one I think you have a thought about something very important in confidence, that has to do with people's feelings, called confidentiality. Could you say that for now?
Yeah, I think that people come into a confidence situation expecting and hoping that what they say will be between the person they're with and themselves. And I think that needs to be clarified, it needs to be said to them. Because it makes all the difference in the world. If they feel that you're going to keep them confident and use the information between the two of you, they will accept. If they feel in any way that it's going to leak out into the community or agency at large, in my case, or church, perhaps, it's a factor in being secretive and not sharing everything that needs to be shared. And something we need to clarify for people that what they say is between being and
I think it's really easy to underline that. I think that in a pastoral situation, first of all, just for some people just going to the pastor's office and being there is a signal to other people around that there is going to be a conversation going on. And I think when the conversation center takes place in the normal day-by-day situations, it's very easy to have some of these things slip out. I think that every pastor is aware of the fact that these things need to be confidential, but I don't have to be stressed in a very special way because there are all kinds of hazards by which this can be violated. I think this person has the right to accept that kind of confidential understanding.
What goes on in my office between me and whoever is strictly between me and whoever, and we never go in the outside the office. And the other thing is that it seems like a man. Is it part of the discovery of causing people to lose confidence in the emotional could you say a few words more about the relationship in confidence as a valuing process? I think that's a part of what we mean when we talk about the emotional aspect of content.
Well, I think that's related to a concept that we talk around entirely too lately. You know, the idea that every human being has a right to be here. Every human being is one of God's sin, you know. It has a lot to talk about dignity, about that person being as important as we are, as important as the head of the church board, you know, no matter what it looks like, what it talks like, no matter whether he comes in and hasn't had too much to drink and that's not very coherent, or whether he comes in overcome with emotion and simply unable to function, that person is important. And it's our job as a pastor to get that across, to help people feel, feel as opposed to think. And at a really deep emotional level, that we care about them, not because they're, you know, more dancing down the street, but because they are another human being. It is not a very different kind of thing. We've got to, in that way, show that we respect them because they are human beings.
I have seen simply that family answers me and do this by paying attention to me. I'm really paying attention What is more an African thing to do? That was just so that he would suggest that we both have a religious plan for one another and that we go to work.
I don't know if it's okay to do that. What do you think? Following the principle that I can't give you more. And that I have to have a facilitating way of going back to where they are, to what they're doing, to what they're saying. I
think
that would be tricky
for them. I think what I do is no room for being that kind of doctor. I say no room for being that. That doesn't work. I'm not going to do that. I can do it with you in that way. And then get a doctor and not just use the drug. So I would react
to this. This is happening. That this is a good hypothetical sometimes I think you have a feeling, they want you to reinforce the feeling they already have. And they get like some kind of tactic lesson on it. I really would like to have a divorce, but I want God to bless it. Come on, if you feel so cold, then that's really what I want you to say.
I would give you the commonship that people often think of counseling as simply being a reinforcement process. They can come to you and get your sanction for something they want to do. And you have to have the foresight to understand that what people want to do often is not much good for them. You have to help them understand what is good for them. It sounds like an arrogant statement. As part of having a serious counseling.
Well, I actually want to keep in mind, and I've been pushing into that kind of corner, is that if you let her do that to you and you fall for it, and you say, yes, I think that you're the horrible thing for your husband to suggest before, it's not getting so good to you, everything's going to start right on with that and walk you over the head with just that, and you said it, and I think you've kind of done it then, haven't you?
Can we use this just a moment ago? My immediate reaction to that kind of question, I think, would have been, now why do you suppose, what do you suppose brought her to this point of saying, I want to go to God? Do you see that this is a valid kind of thing of putting this out there? She hasn't got a hold of it.
That's funny. I'm not going to take a statement like that to face value and tell each other with it.
And you're telling her that she ain't going to be the
judge.
Mm-hmm. You're telling her that I think that she's definitely going to have it.
I think that one reason people are emotionally disturbed is because of the way in which they were raised and the awareness they think about the lesson. Something that I found very important is to assist people in labeling their emotions. We didn't have a lot of inadequate emotional vocabulary. We didn't have a talk about emotions. Occasionally, I think the counselor can be very helpful in the counseling situation by labeling emotions that occur in the room among the participants, their own or theirs, to say to someone, you seem to be frustrated to me. What do you see? To say to someone else, that makes you very sad. Just so that emotion gets labeled so it can be talked about.
I often use this technique with married couples. Asking them if they can label each other's emotions. And you're often get to the point where they can see that what looks like anger on the surface when it contains that emotion, anger, really is some very deep hurt and sadness made a little bit. And being able to separate those two things took us another level of attention, took us back when we were getting in touch with each other's feelings. Mm-hmm. I do, the labeling thing, not only for the negative emotions and the feelings, but for the love and loving. That's important.
And then helping them see when they're mislabeled. I think that I like to add on the line that people will say, I feel hurt when it's not hurt at all, then it could be the other way around. Or I feel this way, they're not really in touch with how they feel. Or they can't label it, and it's really helpful. It's probably going to be so, you're angry. So it's open. It's really good and not emotion. And it is angry. It's not anything else but that. It's very not. They're either not able to label it, or else they've been talked to about how you act after it. If you're going to call it something else, even though you want to play the game out of it.
People have the value system that certain emotions are unacceptable to them. And so you say to somebody, look, you seem to be angry right now. You're angry. And you hear that, you point to the fact that I am not angry.
Yeah, it sometimes all gets a little bit educational. I say, well, what is an intuition? I see strength, peace. I feel a very tight voice. I see you tending your system a bit. Those things are not anger to me. What do they send to you? Sometimes that's you're right, you also have to insist on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be weeks before the person himself will be able to say, yeah, I do feel the number.
Mm-hmm. And some people hang up about certain words, unable to acknowledge who, because they think it's unforgivable to who. And maybe you can defend it with hate. You're not going to be able to. Maybe it's not acceptable. How long do you stay with a person like this where you really have the feeling that they have to come to grips with it? I'm not angry at my husband and everything that he's doing. I'm really not angry. I'm just concerned about him. And this kind of thing, how long do you stay with them? Maybe they can't, obviously, I guess they can't get a hold of it, but do you stay with them until something is important to me that in a situation like this is pretty important?
I think the person himself can help you. If you know the interpretation of his anger and it seems to soften up a little bit, and to say, yeah, maybe so. Or to give you some indication, verbally or non verbally, that. So you're willing to think about what you said, and you can push a little bit. But if you get more resistant and the truth get more tense, then it's probably wise not to push it that day or that particular study in the hour.
And you can push it a little different by when you could say, what are you feeling about me? Right now, I've been telling you that you're angry and you can tell me that now. And I keep on the same line that you become to me, and how do you feel about me? You might be very surprised to be here, but you're not talking to me. I feel a little bit like you become to help me. You might have a lot at that point.
I'd like to underline that statement because I think it's very important that it can be used many times in many ways to help somebody keep talking about the situation. What do you feel about me? Or what are you thinking right now? Or what's going through your head? Or what do you feel in your thoughts or your stomach? Can you say that? It sometimes helps me with a person beyond the resistance that they rather not feel that to opening up themselves and feeling themselves with.
That's the nice thing about testing for emotion. There are people who are whose emotional response happens 30 minutes to 3 hours after the event that triggers it, you know. For those of us that are really difficult to believe, but I think it's true. And there are people who are out of touch with their own emotional life to the extent that they don't feel to test unnecessarily on such a person is really worth time. It's not going to hurt you particularly, but it's really worth time. But you don't get into that the first time around and start away and then you might try again later on. And if you position yourself before that emotional reaction seems different from what might be the past, then you begin to get closer to where you are really. I think that another important function in terms of emotional aspects of counseling is the practice of ventilating just to get the emotion out, to get it expressed. I wonder if you could really think about it a bit more. How would you think that someone who is really very, very tight, coming to the system and ventilating and then you feeling that what they've done is all wrong?
The first thing is a relatively easy thing to do if you really think that people are willing to spill over with emotion. All you have to do is recognize that. People in situations like this are often easy. That would be normal. And then they are beginning to spill over. And it's like water coming over a dam. You know, we have to be prepared for that. But it means that you seem like an overwhelming amount of emotion coming up. But we have to realize that it's been building up for a long time. And the second aspect, the thing of helping people understand that emotions are okay. First of all, you can count on the fact that if the water comes over the dam, you're going to feel good. There's just less tension in the body, and you must feel good. So that's helpful right there. The other thing is you can make a statement that all human beings feel and think at one time or another. You can learn to them that they're part of the human family and not different, and not, you know, stupid, dumb, or ignorant because they've had these emotions.
That's right.
I think that's the most important. You know, anyone who comes into my office and cries, and then the general reaction is, I'm here. And I just say, that is true. Anything to be told about is so
Then it brings us to another point that I think is rather an important one. And that is the amount of repetition of emotional content in counseling. Counseling needs to have the emotional dimension in order to be good at very much, I think. That emotional dimension needs to be recognized. So you have done it with someone at the end of the hour, and the next time they come in again, you might ask them to tell you again about what we were talking about just as you ended. And you pick up there and tell us more about that, or tell me about it again. I think it would be helpful for you to do that. they could get back into it. And go over the same content again, and the feeling is probably being a bit reduced, and we can use the new one.
This is a way, this is a way of defusing the anxiety. How can we get it under control of the head? The brain, an important aspect of how we're trying to help people recognize the good emotions, the gift, and can be helpful.
Once it's counter to new expectations because in social kind of things, if you say it once, you say it, then you can't say it again. There's repetition involved. And in the counter situation, it might be not appropriate to say it again. One final subject. In terms of the emotional aspect of counter, it has to do with resistance to change in people. People can say they want to change, say they have a difficulty with it, and something needs to be done about them. But then you notice after you've talked with them for 3-4 hours that the changes aren't happening. I wonder if the pastoral counselor might at such a point begin to say that there is such a thing as resistance. And such a counselor, do you ever use that kind of way?
Yeah, that's a fascinating idea. But it stems from an important kind of idea. You know, people all have want to relieve their suffering. They want to get out of a painful situation that they're in. But they want to do it without basically changing themselves very much. And you see, the tricky thing is that if you push them to change themselves, on the one hand, many people will pick it up as all saying, you're not good enough for where you are. That's part of the reason. The fear. And the anxiety caused by thinking, I'm not good enough the way I am. And the second part of resistance to change is that some people don't know how. They don't know how to change the behavior. And they're afraid of the reaction of other people if they try something new. And they need the support of a counselor who can say, quiet, but no flaw.
So we can go out and talk about it. So let me just think a bit. Let me talk about what you can do differently and not doing. Why don't you try to put a step between now and next week and watch very carefully what happens, how you feel about it, and then come back and talk about it.
I think it's important to put the whole idea of not wanting to change in normal kind of way. Human beings don't want to change. It's not easy to change. It's important to keep it in that aspect rather than the aspect of what's wrong with you if you can't change the habit. What's wrong with you if you can't smile at your husband or girlfriend when you can't change?
The counselor is that they're trying to see if you can't change the habit of my like, trying to start making some time and, you know,